Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Health Report and Explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter from Washington. Today we hear about China's economy. Growth in China is heavily led by exports. Now, other considerations, including the level of consumer spending, could also be influencing China's numbers. But first, we hear about new developments in relations between mainland China and Taiwan. Top officials from China and Taiwan held historic talks last week for the first time in 65 years. These talks opened a new chapter in relations between the two sides. Christopher Cruz has this report.
Wang Yuqi, head of Taiwan's Mainland Affairs Council, and Zhang Jiejun, head of China's Taiwan Affairs Office, met officially in Nanjing. Both men expressed surprise that they were able to hold official meetings in the first place. They were also surprised that the talks were organized in only 4 months. China and Taiwan share a very complex past. The two still do not officially recognize each other. China's Zhang Jiejun says relations between China and Taiwan need imagination to move forward. Mr. Zhang says that in the past, this meeting would be impossible to imagine. He adds that both sides must use imaginative ways to resolve problems that still exist between the two sides. Taiwan's Mr. Wang says these talks gave the two Asian rivals an opportunity to speak openly about difficult issues. Mr. Wang says the meeting has improved relations. He adds that it is not easy to discuss the long-standing problems between the two. But he adds that these talks will move relations between China and Taiwan forward. An imaginative solution can be as simple as location. Joseph Chung is a political scientist. He explains the importance of holding the talks in Nanjing.
The nationalist government first established the capital in Nanjing, so this is much more acceptable from Taipei's point of view, and certainly one can refer to the fond memories of Dr. Sun Yat-sen in Nanjing.
Mr. Chung adds that meeting in Nanjing instead of Beijing is good for Taipei.
Being able to avoid Beijing is a very, very small victory on the part of Taipei.
During the visit, Mr. Wang visited the burial site of Sun Yat-sen, the founder of modern China. At the burial site, he also praised Taiwan's democratic successes. Mr. Wang visited the former presidential office of Chiang Kai-shek. This former office is now a museum of modern Chinese history. The talks between Chinese and Taiwanese officials produced no formal agreements. But the talks laid the groundwork for future communication between the two. Mr. Wang invited Mr. Zhang to visit Taiwan in the near future. Mr. Zhang expressed his desire to visit Taiwan as soon as the time was appropriate. But that date has not been set. I'm Christopher Cruz.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter. China's economic growth has slowed, settling at 7.7% last year. Some economists blame a lack of consumer spending for the decrease. Steve Ember has this report on China's economy.
Ma Jiantang is director of China's National Bureau of Statistics. He says it is no easy job to keep growth at over 7% and inflation low at the same time. That is made more difficult by the size and nature of China's economy, the world's second largest. Mr. Ma says this combination of high growth and limited inflation is unusual in the world. China's economy had 10% growth rates in the years before the world financial crisis of 2008. That economic expansion resulted from big trade surpluses and foreign investment. Now, says Ma Jiantang, China is seeking to move away from that growth model. The country is working to balance exports with demand at home. Recently released information shows that household spending in China remains lower than in most economies. Chinese government estimates put household spending at about 36% of all goods and services produced within the country. That is down from 49% in 1978. By comparison, Thailand's household spending represents 56% of its economy. Some experts dispute the belief that China's personal consumption is so low. They say businesses often buy goods for their employees to avoid taxes. This means companies are increasing demand for household goods by buying them directly. Chinese officials say they want to reduce the economic influence of state-controlled businesses and to let market forces shape the economy. However, economists expect China's growth to slow in the coming years. How quickly that happens depends on several issues. The recovery of the United States and European economies means rising demand for Chinese exports. One issue that might slow growth is the expanding load of local government debt. That debt is estimated at about $3 trillion, or about one-third of the size of the economy. China has long tied its estimate of local officials to their ability to grow the economy. Reforms are possible, but some could slow economic growth. The government is moving away from growth to areas such as environmental protection and the ability of local officials to contain debt. Experts say that could also weaken investment and slow growth. I'm Steve Ember.
Thank you for joining us today. We bring you a new As It Is program every day at 030 hours Universal Time. I'm Mario Ritter from Washington. Tell us what you want to hear about. Go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com, and click on Contact Us. You can also follow us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. And listen to VOA World News at the beginning of every hour, Universal Time.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health Report. The sound of a mosquito can mean trouble in many parts of the world. The bite of the mosquito can be deadly. The insects carry serious diseases like malaria. The World Health Organization estimates that almost 630,000 people died from malaria and malaria-related causes in 2012. Most of these cases were in African countries south of the Sahara Desert. In the United States, scientists are seeking new ways to fight malaria. A group of California scientists is working to develop a more effective and less costly substance to protect people from mosquitoes. The researchers work at the University of California, Riverside. They are investigating the sense of smell in mosquitoes. They found the insects use the same receptor for identifying carbon dioxide in human breath as they do for the smell of our skin. Ananda Sankar Ray is leading the investigation. He says scientists tested more than 1 million chemical compounds until they found a substance called ethyl pyruvate. He says ethyl pyruvate makes the mosquito's receptor inactive.
When we apply ethyl pyruvate to a human arm and offer it to the mosquitoes, hungry mosquitoes, in a cage, then very few of the mosquitoes are attracted to the human arm because only a few of them are able to smell it out.
Genevieve Tooks is a member of the UC Riverside research team. She says it was not easy to find the neurons or nerve cells that recognize both the smell of human breath and skin. She describes a device the researchers are using to examine mosquitoes.
With this apparatus, we're able to insert a very small electrode into the part of the mosquito's nose, effectively, where its olfactory neurons are and where the smell is happening.
The scientists use these instruments to look for the signals that a mosquito's neurons send to its brain when it finds an interesting smell. Computer screen images show when the sense is strong or weak. Ananda Sankar Ray says a product based on ethyl pyruvate may cost less to manufacture than DEET, the most effective chemical treatment now in use. He says DEET is too costly for most people who live in areas affected by malaria.
Perhaps by finding odors that can attack other target receptors, we will be able to improve upon DEET and finally have the next generation of insect behavior control products.
The scientists believe they will soon be able to find a way to manufacture less costly and more effective products for the fight against mosquitoes. And that's the Health Report from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Explorations, a program in special English by The Voice of America. It was called the last great goal in flying. It would be a flight around the world without stopping or adding more fuel. Today, Frank Oliver and Doug Johnson tell about a special plane called Voyager and the effort to set a difficult world record.
Voyager began as a quick drawing on a small piece of paper. 6 years later, the drawing was a plane that made history. Many people gave their time, energy, and money to help make the flight happen. But three people had lead parts in the event. Dick Rutan, Bert Rutan, and Gina Yeager. Dick Rutan was an experienced flyer. He had been a pilot in the United States military during the war in Vietnam. After the war, he worked as a test pilot. He flew planes designed by his younger brother, Bert. Bert Rutan was well known as a designer of experimental planes, and Gina Yeager held 9 world flight records as a pilot.
One day in early 1981, Dick, Bert, and Gina were eating in a restaurant in Mojave, California. Bert turned to his brother and asked a wild question. How would you like to be the first person to fly around the world without stopping to refuel? The three considered the idea. A non-stop flight around the world without refueling was the last flight record to be set. The flight always had been considered impossible. No plane could carry enough fuel to fly that far, 40,000 kilometers. But now there were new materials for planes. Bert thought he could build a plane that could make the voyage. Dick and Gina thought they could fly it. No one could think of a good reason not to try. Bert picked up a small piece of paper. He drew an airplane that looked like a giant wing and not much more. That was the beginning.
Not since the days of Orville and Wilbur Wright had the people making a record flight designed and built their own aircraft. Dick, Bert, and Gina did. Some people thought their Voyager project was both impossible and foolish. Everyone knew it would be dangerous. The Voyager crew worked on the plane in a small building at an airport in California's Mojave Desert. Dick, Bert, and Gina received no government money. Instead, they got small amounts of money from lots of different people. As news of the project spread, more and more people offered to help. There were aviation engineers and workers from the space agency's experimental plane project. Several airplane companies offered equipment to be used in the plane. When Voyager was finished, it had $2 million worth of parts in it.
Bert Rutan had built lightweight planes before. He knew a normal plane made of aluminum metal could not make a trip around the world without adding fuel. So his solution was to build Voyager almost completely out of new materials. The materials were very light, but very strong. This meant Voyager could lift and carry many times its weight in fuel. The finished plane weighed just 900 kilograms, about the weight of a small car. The full load of fuel weighed three times that much, about 3,000 kilograms. Voyager was not built to be a fast plane. It flew about 175 kilometers an hour.
The main wing of the finished plane was more than 33 meters across. That is wider than the main wing on today's big passenger planes. The center part of the plane held the crew. And on either side of this body were two long fuel tanks. In fact, almost all of the Voyager was a fuel tank. 17 separate containers were squeezed into every possible space. During the flight, the pilots had to move fuel from container to container to keep the plane balanced. One engine at each end of the body of the plane provided power. The area for the two pilots was unbelievably small. It was just 1 meter wide by 2 1/4 meters long. The person flying the plane sat in the pilot's seat. The other person had to lie down at all times.
After many test flights, the Voyager was finally ready in December 1986. The best weather for flying around the world is from June to August. That time was far past. But the pilots were tired of delays. They made the decision to take off, knowing the weather might be bad. On December 14th, Dick Rutan and Gina Yeager walked around the plane one more time. It looked like a giant white flying insect. They were going to be trusting their lives to this strange plane for the next 9 days. Dick climbed into the only seat. Gina lay on the floor. They were ready to go. Flight controllers at Edwards Air Force Base in California cleared them for a trip no one had ever attempted before.
The long, thin wings of the plane were so loaded with fuel that they almost touched the ground. Voyager began to move down the runway slowly. But something was wrong. The ends of the wings were not lifting. Bert Rutan sent a radio message to his brother to lift the plane's nose. "Pull back on the stick," he screamed. "Pull back." But Dick did not hear the warning, and he did not see the wings. He was looking straight ahead. Voyager was getting dangerously close to the end of the runway. It appeared about to crash. Finally, just in time, the long wings swept up. The plane leaped into the air. Planes following Voyager could see that the ends of the wings were badly damaged. Dick turned the plane so the force of air currents would break off the broken ends. Then he aimed Voyager out over the Pacific Ocean.
Weight was the main consideration in designing the experimental plane, not safety, not comfort. Voyager did not have most of the normal safety equipment of modern planes. There were no special materials to block the noise of the engines, and space for the pilots was so tight they had great difficulty changing places. Voyager's long wings moved up and down as the winds changed. It seemed to sail on waves of air, just like a sailboat on ocean waves. This motion meant the flight was extremely rough.
It was not an enjoyable trip. Dick and Gina were always tense. At the end of the second day, the weather expert for the flight warned of trouble. Voyager was heading for an ocean storm. Dick was able to fly close to the storm and ride its winds. On the third day, Voyager was in trouble again. It had to fly between huge thunderhead clouds on one side and Vietnam's airspace on the other. Dick was able to keep the plane safely in the middle. Over Africa, the two pilots struggled with continuous stormy weather. Dick had flown almost all of the first 60 hours of the flight. Then he changed places with Gina for short periods. Both were extremely tired. Suddenly, a red warning light turned on. It was a signal that there was not enough oil in one engine. Dick and Gina had been so busy trying to fly around bad weather and mountains that they had forgotten to watch the oil level. But luck stayed with them. They added the necessary oil. The engine was not damaged.
Once past the violent weather over Africa, Dick and Gina began planning the way home. A computer confirmed that they had enough fuel left to make it. But as they flew up the coast of Mexico, the engine on the back of the plane failed. Fuel had stopped flowing to it. The more powerful front engine already had been shut down earlier to save fuel. With neither engine working, Voyager quickly began to lose speed and height. The plane fell for 5 minutes. Dick finally got the front engine started again. Then fuel started flowing to the back engine, and it began to work again, too.
9 days after takeoff, Voyager landed smoothly at Edwards Air Force Base in California. It had completed a 40,000-kilometer flight around the world. It had not stopped, and it had not refueled. Dick said after landing, "This was the last major event of atmospheric flight." Gina added, "It was a lot more difficult than we ever imagined." Bert Rutan's revolutionary plane design had worked, and with it, Dick Rutan and Gina Yeager had joined the list of the world's greatest flyers.
This special English program was written by Marilyn Rice Cristiano. Your narrators were Frank Oliver and Doug Johnson. I'm Shirley Griffith. Listen again next week for another Explorations program on the Voice of America.